everybody. I'm here for episode 36 of whatever this is, and we're on the Book of Numbers, chapter 18. And the Lord said unto Aaron, I'm sorry, I didn't ask you guys how you are. How are you? Good. And the Lord said unto Aaron, thou and thy sons and thy father's house with thee shall bear the iniquities of the sanctuary, and thou and thy sons with thee shall bear the iniquity of your priesthood. And thy brethren also of the tribe of Levi, the tribe of thy father, that bring thou with thee, that they may be joined unto thee, and minister unto thee. But thou and thy sons with thee shall minister before the tabernacle of witness. And they shall keep thy charge, and the charge of all the tabernacle. Only they shall not come nigh the vessels of the sanctuary and the altar, that neither they nor ye also die. And they shall be joined unto thee, and keep the charge of the tabernacle of the congregation for all the service of the tabernacle, and a stranger shall not come nigh unto you. And ye shall keep the charge of the sanctuary, and the charge of the altar, that there be no wrath any more upon the children of Israel. Okay, so God's just sort of threatening that the people have to keep tending to all the weird stuff that you have to do with the tabernacle, otherwise he'll have wrath upon them, inflict wrath upon them. So, yeah, that's pretty much what's been going on in the Bible. Not a whole lot exciting yet. And I have taken your brethren, the Levites, from among the children of Israel. To you they are given as a gift for the Lord, to do the service of the tabernacle of the congregation. Oh, that's nice of him. God always knows what to get people. That guy, he gave an entire family line of people as slaves to Moses. That is so thoughtful. Oh my gosh, he's one of those people that just, every gift they give is just so, it's always thought out and just really nice. Oh, that is so nice. I wouldn't have thought, I probably would have got Moses socks or something, you know, but an entire family line of people as slaves. That is, oh man, I bet he got a really good deal on them too. Therefore, thou and thy sons with thee shall keep your priest's office for everything of the altar and within the veil, and ye shall serve. I have given your priest's office unto you as a service of gift, and the stranger that cometh nigh shall be put to death. So if anyone tries to minister except Moses and his company there, his family and his slaves or whatever, they'll be killed. And the Lord spake unto Aaron, behold, I also have given thee a charge of mine heave offerings of all the hallowed things of the children of Israel. Unto thee have I given them by reason of the anointing, and to thy sons by an ordinance forever. Interesting. This shall be thine of the most holy things, reserved from the fire, every oblation of theirs, every meat offering of theirs, and every sin offering of theirs, and every trespass offering of theirs, which they shall render unto me, shall be the most holy F. The words are cut off on the page here. Shall be the most holy F. Was it like God was talking and he's like, and children, it shall be most holy F. Something happened to God while he was trying to, okay, hold on, let me find another source here. Just a second. I need this anyway, so. Shall be most holy F. Shall be most holy for thee and for thy sons. Slightly less funny. So now here we get to the crux of the matter here. I wonder how, in case you didn't understand that holy F language, pretty much God just told Moses and Aaron that they have to minister to the tabernacle of the Lord, but in exchange they get all of everything that people give them. Anything. So, I wonder how Moses sort of sold this to the people. You know, he must have been like, oh, man. So I just, oh, guys, I'm so mad. I just got off the phone with God. And so here's the thing. He's given me this awful job of the priesthood. Oh, I'm so pissed. I have to do all these offerings and all this. I have to, like, manage people and with the tabernacle and all that. And it's a lot of responsibility, because if I don't do it right, then we're all dead. Oh, man. Oh, and the other thing is he did say that all the offerings of money and animals and food and all that you give to him go actually to me. He did say that. Oh, but, oh, man, I would totally trade with you guys to not have this horrible job that he gave me. Ah. Oh. It's funny. There's all this language about the this is Thomas again. This is that was Moses. This is Tom. I'm Thomas now. This is Thomas. There's this language about the priesthood being a burden and all that. And I think that's why it's in there. You know, to sort of like to make it look like Moses is getting the raw deal so they won't question him too much. And the funny thing is that this has been taken from the notes I'm reading. I get the idea that this has been taken as this life lesson to quote these notes, to never envy someone else's honors or desire high places. It's like, oh, and all right, I got to go on a bit of a tangent here because, well, these notes pretty much analyze the Bible to death for all these little bits of wisdom. Like deepities, as Dan Dennett calls them, which I think is a great name for him. Things that might seem profound, but then are really just not. And so there's all these little things like this. Like this person saying, let's just look at this lesson. This supposedly, people think this is a sign of the Bible's depth, that you can read it and just get all these different messages and all that. So and this is just one instance out of a billion of this, but let's just look at this one lesson. Never envy someone else's praises or seek high places because of the responsibilities and opportunities to fail that they are burdened with all that responsibility. Uh-huh. So what kind of a lesson is that? It's so general as to seem wise, but in reality, when you think about it, if you actually critically think about it, it's completely vacuous. What if you're a really great person who can shoulder a lot of responsibility and is really an effective leader and all that? Should you listen to that advice and not seek high places because of this brilliant little Bible lesson? No, I'm guessing not. But if you're a coward or just you're not up for it, then okay, maybe you listen to it. So what did it tell you? What work did the Bible do there? It essentially said, if you're a leader, then go lead. But if you're not, then don't lead. Is that and that's what religious scholars seem to think is like, I mean, even if you can get some good lessons out of the Bible, you can get anything out of it. When you go, if anyone had a college English class, actually college English might've been depend on what, who the professor was. But I remember a high school English class I had where it was pretty much just the most like, you'd read a poem or a reading or something like that, and then people would just talk, and any interpretation they would give would be met with like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, that's good. There's no wrong answers here, and that always bothered me so much. But that's what this is. You can do that with anything. You could take a Dr. Seuss book, and probably get more wisdom out of it than you do out of this Bible. Just. By taking, stretching little things. Okay, I've ranted about this long enough, but that really is a lot of what goes on with this Bible. And then the other point is, sorry, the other point with this verse is God is threatening about smiting them and all that if they don't give all these offerings just right. And then he tells Moses, you can have all the offerings. They're yours. Like, tell me, what in the world? Somebody tell me what these offerings are for. What is it that they are accomplishing? Are they for God? Do they yet, you just, they're for, Moses just gets them. He just receives them. But but God likes that. God enjoys Moses getting things. Is that what, it doesn't make any sense. It's so, you could come up with some abstract explanation for why it makes sense with God and do a lot of backflips to try to make that make sense. Or you can just realize that what makes infinitely more sense is that this was just invented as a way for Moses to get things from people. It makes quite a bit more sense. Okay, moving on. In the most holy place shalt thou eat it. Every male shall eat it. It shall be holy unto thee. And this is thine, the heave offering of their gift, with all the wave offerings of the children of Israel. I have given them unto thee and to thy sons and to thy daughters with thee by a statute forever. Everyone that is clean in thy house shall eat. Oh, crap, am I missing? Shall eat. Shall eat of it. Okay. And no one sees through this, that Moses is telling him that he gets, he and his whole family forever get to eat all the heave offerings that anyone would ever get. No one questions that. And best of that was weird. All the best of the oil. Somehow I was going to say, and best of all. I'm a little bit dyslexic. And best of all, also known as all the best of the oil, and all the best of the wine, and of the wheat, the first fruits of them which they shall offer unto the Lord, them have I given thee. Given them more stuff. And whatsoever is first ripe in the land, which they shall bring unto the Lord, shall be thine. Every one that is clean in thy house shall eat of it. Everything devoted in Israel shall be thine. Everything that openeth the matrix in the all flesh, which they bring unto the Lord, whether it be of men or of beasts, shall be thine. Excuse me. Nevertheless, the firstborn of man shalt thou surely redeem, and the firstling of unclean beasts shalt thou redeem. And at this point, Moses is like, okay, let's see. Is there anything else I want? And those that are to be redeemed from a month old shalt thou redeem, according to thine estimation, for the money of 5 shekels after the shekel of the sanctuary, which is 20 gerahs. Wow. Oh, yes. Hold on just a second. Remember that whole redeeming chapter that happened, and I didn't really understand who was paying whom and for what, where you'd pay somebody for a child that you had, or like, I thought for a second you were trading in your kids for money. You know, like, that's what it sounded like. But, oh, anyway, thank Yahweh, I decided to have a look at the notes in this verse, and one of them completely explained it. It is, you have to hear this. Hold on, let me pull it up. Okay, so this is the redeeming process. This note here, Clark's commentary on the Bible, says, it describes the process. The priest then takes the child into his arms. Okay, sorry. No, that's where it starts. The priest takes the child into his arms and, addressing himself to the mother, says, "Is this thy son, mother?" "Yes." Priest: "Hast thou never had another child, male or female, a miscarriage or untimely birth?" Mother: "No." Priest: "This being the case, this child, as firstborn, belongs to me." Then, turning to the father, he says, "If it be thy desire to have this child, thou must redeem it." Father: "I present thee with this gold and silver for this purpose." Priest: "Thou dost wish, therefore, to redeem the child?" Father: "I do wish to do so." The priest then, turning himself to the assembly, says, "Very well, this child, as firstborn, is mine, as is written in Bemidbar. Thou shalt redeem the firstborn of a month old for 5 shekels, but I shall content myself with this in exchange. He then takes 2 gold crowns or thereabouts and returns the child to his parents. That is fantastic. That is just fantastic. I hope you were able to follow that. I can never tell because when I listen to stuff, sometimes I space out and I'm not good at it. But I'm going to assume you're better at following stuff. That is just, that is brilliant. Brilliant. And who does all that money go to? Does it go to charity, doing good work? Oh, no, it just goes to Moses and his family. I forgot. This is the most brilliant thing anyone has ever come up with. I really mean, he's making people buy back their own children. This is the greatest con in the history of time. I'm starting to become impressed by just how much of a con job religion is. It's amazing. It's the ultimate. It's so abstract, but it makes so much sense. You're essentially saying, look, an invisible force that only I can talk to is going to really harm you unless you give me, you know, X. It's incredible. It doesn't get any simpler than that and cost effective. It really doesn't. I mean, I'm sure they had to do a bit of work to get people to believe it and everything, but once it takes root, you can have anything. You can make people buy their own children from you. That Wow. Also, I wonder how many times the father was like, nah, you can have, just keep him. I don't really have 2 shekels. That's a lie. I have 2 shekels, but I don't really have 4 shekels. And I really need 3 shekels to buy into the poker game later. So, yeah. That's a lie, too. I have 4 shekels, but really, this child is just going to cost me, like, when you think about it, it's going to cost me 1 million shekels over the course of its life. So, it's really, I'm getting a good deal to just give it to you now. It's not even worth 4 shekels. How about you give me... This is what I would have done. Well, priest, we have ourselves a little conundrum here. How about you pay me 50 shekels and I'll take that baby off your hands. Somebody must have done that in the history of time, of the Jewish tradition. Somebody has to have done that. I would have. I wonder how many children the descendants of Aaron have had to raise just because of shitty parents. We're just like, oh man, I don't have 4 shekels or 2 shekels. Get out, run. It was sort of a kosher abortion technique, you know? Just, well, okay, it's just adoption, I guess. But it's like a free adoption service. Ah, it's amazing. Anyway, but if you actually care about your children, it's horrible. This is the most awful thing I've ever heard. But the firstling of a cow, or the firstling of a sheep, or the firstling of a goat, thou shalt not redeem. They are holy. Yeah, so this is the first part. God's saying, don't redeem them. They are holy. Now, here's what you do with them. Thou shalt sprinkle their blood upon the altar and shalt burn their fat for an offering made by fire for a sweet savor unto the Lord. That must have been great news for the cows and the sheep and the goats. They're like, they heard that part and they're like, ha ha, take that, all you other filthy animals. We are holy. You hear that? We're not getting redeemed. We don't have that. And then God's like, yes, they are so holy that you shall murder them and sprinkle their blood on the altar and burn their fat for an offering. good times. And the flesh of them shall be thine, as the wave breast and as the right shoulder are thine. All the heave offerings of the holy things which the children of Israel offer unto the Lord have I given thee, and thy sons and thy daughters with thee, by a statute forever. It is a covenant of salt forever before the Lord unto thee and to thy seed forever. And the Lord spake unto Aaron, thou shalt have no inheritance in their land, neither shalt thou have any part among them. I am thy part and thine inheritance among the children of Israel. So I guess that little part is pretty much Moses trying to even things out a little bit. Maybe because he says, to recap there, he's, he says they get all this stuff, but then in return, they don't get a share of the land that God is giving them. But really, why would that even matter? Because I'm sure they'll just eminent domain it when they get there. They'll be like, well, this is not, we don't get any of the land because, you know, fair is fair, but we're going to need to put our tabernacle right there. And you're still going to need to, redeem your children with us and all that. But the land is yours. The land that this tabernacle is on is yours. That is your land, you know. You can, well, you can't really do anything with it because there's a tabernacle there. But that is, that you, when property tax time comes, that is declared as your part of your tax burden. So, you know, I guess that's not really good, but you get to say that that is your land. And behold, yeah, that's where I am. Yes. And behold, I have given the children of Levi all the tenth in Israel for an inheritance for their service, which they serve, even in the service of the tabernacle of the congregation. Mm-hmm. Neither must the children of Israel henceforth come nigh the tabernacle of the congregation, lest they bear sin and die. So anyone who's not a priest, don't come near the tabernacle or you'll die. That was just to keep people out, I bet, from observing how much plunder, Moses and his family were going through there. But the Levites shall do the service of the tabernacle of the congregation, and they shall bear their iniquity. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations, that among the children of Israel they have no inheritance. But the tithes of the children of Israel, which they offer as an heave offering unto the Lord, I have given to the Levites to inherit. Therefore I have said unto them, among the children of Israel, children of Israel, they shall have no inheritance. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, thus speak unto the Levites, and say unto them, when ye take of the children of Israel the tithes, which... I wonder if Moses was ever just really bitchy mood and was like, you know what, Lord? Why don't you tell them yourself for once? I've had it with you. I have had it with you. I'm sure one day he did that. Just one of the days. And the next day he's like, No, that night, Moses was sleeping on the couch. The Lord's like, the Lord was giving him the silent treatment. Okay, thus speak to the Levites and say unto them, when ye take of the children of Israel the tithes which I have given you from them for your inheritance, then ye shall offer up an heave offering of it for the Lord, even a tenth part of the tithe. This really is a tongue twister with all the tithes and the parts and the off. Anyway. And this is your heave offering. Your heave offering, shall be reckoned unto you as though it were the corn of the threshing floor and as the fullness of the wine press. Thus ye also shall offer an heave offering unto the Lord of all your tithes, which ye receive of the children of Israel, and ye shall give thereof the Lord's heave offering to Aaron the priest. Out of all your gifts ye shall offer every heave offering of the Lord, of all the best thereof, even the hallowed part thereof out of it. So this is, who in the world kept track of all the tithes and the tithe dealings? Because pretty much what he described there is he was saying that Aaron and the Levites or somebody doesn't get all the offerings, but they do get the tithes. But of the tithes, they have to offer 10% back, which Moses get. And then they get 10% of that or something. Like, it's really, I'm not going to go back and bother with it because really, who cares? But they didn't have Microsoft Excel back then, which is what I keep saying. And boy, I wonder how they kept track of all that. I'm sure they just cooked the shit out of the books once tithe giving time came. You know, they're just like, I received three cows and, here you go. You know, count. I didn't keep my receipts. I'm sorry. I know I should. I just didn't think of it.
out of all your gifts, that's what I already read. Therefore, thou shalt say unto them, when ye have heaved the best thereof from it, then it shall be counted into the Levites as the increase of the threshing floor and as the increase of the winepress. That sounds familiar, but it's because it repeats itself. I didn't already read that. And ye shall eat it in every place, ye and your households, for it is your reward for your service in the tabernacle of the congregation. Consider this a reward. And ye shall bear no sin of reason by it, when ye have heaved it from the best of it. Neither shall ye pollute the holy things of the children, lest ye die. And there's a bit of guilt snuck in there, like Moses was feeling a little guilty, so he wrote in there. And don't feel guilty. You can eat all of everybody's food, and don't. I command you not to feel the slightest bit guilty about it, okay? Okay. And on to the next chapter. And guess how it starts? Guess how it starts? And the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, this is, in italics, this is the ordinance. There's stuff in italics every once in a while here. I don't really know what it means. It's the most insignificant words, too. Oh, well. This is the ordinance of the law which the Lord hath commanded, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, that they bring thee a red heifer without spot, wherein is no blemish, and upon which never came yoke. Don't know what that means, but sounds dirty. And ye shall give her unto Eleazar the priest, that he may bring her forth without the camp, and no one shall slay her before his face. I just read that. And one shall slay her before his face. Slightly different. And Eleazar the priest shall take of her blood with his finger and sprinkle of her blood directly before the tabernacle of the congregation 7 times. Not 6. Not 8. Not 7. Yes, 7. I trick you. It is 7. And one shall burn the heifer in his sight. Her skin and her flesh and her blood with her dung shall he burn. And the priest shall take cedar wood and hyssop and scarlet and cast it into the midst of the burning of the heifer. Then the priest shall wash his clothes, and he shall bathe his flesh in water, and afterward he shall come into the camp, and the priest shall be unclean until the even. And he that burneth her shall wash his clothes in water and bathe his flesh in water and shall be unclean until the even. Man, this is this is another example of why I would have been killed so many times already if I were there, if I had been there for this. During this whole thing, I would just kept saying, like, yeah, okay. Yeah. God's like, and the priest shall take cedar wood and, okay, yeah. Uh-huh. And cast it into the midst of the burning of the heifer. Right. So, was that it? What happens after that? What is that for? Why am I doing? Why would I do this? You're asking me to kill an animal and burn it, and take its blood, do something 7 times with it, toss some various and sundry items into a fire with it. Is there something I'm missing? Does anybody get this? Do you guys? Does this do something? What does this do? Well, does it grow into? How is this a tangible thing that I would want to do? What does this? What God? What is this for? What? I don't even know how to articulate this. What? Why is this a thing that you made up? That I do this? Does this? Are you? Does it cure you of something? Are you sick? Is there something wrong with you? You know, I would have been murdered so many times. So many times. I just love how God gives all these commands, you know, looking at this as though it were real. God would be giving all these commands and isn't the slightest bit apologetic nor does he care to explain any of it. He just directly tells them, unabashedly,
to do completely meaningless things without any hint of any reason why or anything. And it's so funny how, like I've said a number of times, when we look back on this from our state of being here in the future, it really doesn't make sense. You know, it's not in a list of 2 million things that you could have brainstormed that you thought a god would do. But back then, I think when things were a little more primitive, authoritative, you know, it made sense to them that if there was an all-powerful being, he would have all these commands for you to follow and things he wants you to do, and you're not to question it, and that's just how it is. Yeah, I think I'll stick by that as a conjecture as to what's going on here. I think that makes sense. I mean, nowadays we wouldn't even come close to writing anything like that, because in our society anyway, because it's just not what we view God as. But back then, I bet viewing somebody, if conceiving of some authority figure in the sky, this is what they would think of. And a man that is clean shall gather up the ashes of the heifer and lay them up without the camp in a clean place. You know what? Now it makes sense. Now that I think about it, this heifer thing, I take it back. That all makes sense. now that I see that a clean man has to gather up the ashes, that was the last thing. I just should have let God keep going. I didn't listen all the way through. And it shall be kept for the congregation of the children of Israel for a water of separation. It is a purification for sin. Okay, well, at least there's some justification there, but like, how does it purify sin? Does it, what is the mechanic that does that? What? Never mind. I think I've covered that one. And he that gathereth the ashes of the heifer shall wash his clothes. I think everyone should wash their clothes. And be unclean until the even, and it shall be unto the children of Israel and unto the stranger that sojourneth among them for a statute forever. He that toucheth the dead body of any man shall be unclean 7 days. Sorry, just came out of nowhere, but I bet there were a ton of marginal cases where the person was like touching someone as they died. You know, maybe you're holding their hand. They're like, you know, they're going to tell you something, like in movies, how they always die right when they're going to say something. But I bet there are a lot of cases where, you know, somebody died and they're like, let go. And then someone was there, was like, you were touching them. I saw, no, they hadn't died. I saw it. They're still, now, I think I feel a little faint pulse there. You know, they're not, how do you define death? You know, when are you dead? I don't know. Do you know? I'm not a scientist. I don't know. Do you know? I don't know. All I know is I'm not touching his hand now, and I think that I got out in time. You know, I'm sure there are all kinds of cases like that. He shall purify himself with it on the third day, and on the seventh day he shall be clean. But if he purify not himself the third day, then the seventh day he shall not be clean. Whosoever toucheth a dead body of any man that is dead, and purifieth not himself, defileth the tabernacle of the Lord. And that soul shall be cut off from Israel, because the water of separation was not sprinkled upon him. He shall be unclean. His uncle, .. Hold on, let me go to my other source here. Sorry about this. It's kind of annoying. His uncle what? His uncle, what? Am I wrong? His uncle, 1913. That is so funny. It cut off. It says his uncleanness is yet upon him, but it cut off the A-N-N-E-S-S. So it said his uncle. <It's> like, that is pretty funny. Not his uncle. His uncleanness is yet upon him. That was worth a laugh. This is uncle. This is the law when a man dieth in a tent. That's a very God was anticipating something here. This is the law whenever a man dieth in a tent. Let me take time out of my day to put in this timeless book that's going to be printed forever. This law about when someone dies in a tent. Let me put that in there. That's important. All that come into the tent and all that is in the tent shall be unclean 7 days. Well, I guess that gets rid of a little bit of ambiguity with the dying thing. But again, I'm sure there were some cases where someone was like, yeah, no, I had just opened the door to the tent and was going to see if anyone needed anything. When the person died, I wasn't really in it. My arm was sort of in it, but that more of me was out of it. Does that count? Am I unclean? I don't really want to go through all the ritual and crap. I'm pretty sure I wasn't in it. I wasn't even there. Never mind. I take it back. I wasn't there. I was somewhere else. I'm not going to do that again. And every open vessel which hath no covering bound upon it is unclean. And whosoever toucheth one that is slain with a sword in the open fields, or a dead body, or a bone of a man. Don't touch another man's bone. You'll be unclean. That one I can go for. I'm with him on that one. Or a grave shall be unclean 7 days. 7 days is a bit much. Even if you touch a bone of a man, I'd still unclean like a day at most. Well, I guess, you know, standards were different back then. And for an unclean person, they shall take of the ashes of the burnt heifer of purification for sin, and running water shall be put thereto in a vessel. And a clean person shall take hyssop and dip it into the water and sprinkle it upon the tent and upon all the vessels and upon the persons that were there and upon him that touched a bone or one slain or one dead or a grave. And the clean person shall sprinkle upon the unclean on the third day and on the seventh day. On the seventh day he shall purify himself and wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and shall be clean at even. But the man that shall be unclean and shall not purify himself, that soul shall be cut off from among the congregation, because he hath defiled the sanctuary of the Lord. The water of separation hath not been sprinkled upon him. He is unclean. And it shall be a perpetual statute unto them, that he that sprinkleth the water of the separation shall wash his clothes, and he that toucheth the water of the separation shall be unclean till even. And whatsoever the unclean person toucheth shall be unclean, and the soul that toucheth it shall be unclean till even. Okay, done with that. Just trying to burn through the last bit there, because it doesn't matter. All right, this one's a little longer. Then came the children of Israel, even the whole congregation, unto the desert of Zin in the first month, and the people abode in Kadesh, and Miriam died there and was buried there. And the people probably had already completely forgotten all the dead body rules, so they're like, oh, she did just die, didn't she? Let's tell you what, can we start that later? Let's start, okay, starting next dead body, anyone who was in a tent or all that, whatever that was. Okay, next dead body. Okay. One after that. The one after that, actually. I take it back. Like just one more to get used to it. At transitional dead body. And then the one after that, I swear to you, we will go through those cleanliness things. And there was no water for the congregation, and they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron. Jesus. Here it comes. There it comes. Brace yourselves for stupidity. And the people showed with Moses and spake, saying, would God that we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. And why have you brought up the congregation of the Lord into this wilderness, that we and our cattle should die there? And wherefore have you made us come out of Egypt to bring us into this evil place? There is no place of seed or figs or vines or pomegranates. Neither is there any water to drink. There is no way anyone has ever been as stupid as these people portrayed in this book. There is no way. This, as the chosen people of God portrayed in this book. No one ever has been this stupid. Anyone who was this level of stupid required for this to be true wouldn't be capable of human speaking of human-like language. There's no way. I don't even, first of all, I don't even see how anyone is left alive from the last time people questioned Moses. This is so frustratingly stupid. No one is this dumb. No one has ever been this dumb. Here, let me just play, do some play pretend here of what a real person would say if this God was completely true and all the events that had happened were real and this is all, and all of it, none of it's made up. A follower of Moses at this point would probably be something like this. Excuse me, Moses, sir, I'm sure, I know you already know this, but we are really thirsty, and I don't mean to question you in any way, but do we have a plan for when we're gonna get to drink? Has God talked to you about it? Have you asked him? Are we close? I just to let the guys know, you know, just because I'm sure I know he has a plan for us. It seems pretty clear from all that's happened. But if you could just ask him, just talk to him, please, with all respect, we're really, really thirsty. I know he already knows. He knows everything, and I'm sure he has a plan. Just really thirsty. That's all. Thank you. That's what someone who had just witnessed Moses murder, you know, God, not Moses, but God murder a billion, you know, what has he done? He's sunk people into the earth and crushed them. He's burned people. He's done all this stuff for questioning Moses. Yet still, they're all pissy. There's no way. No person has ever been that stupid. Ever. Maybe once they do that. Maybe. No, they wouldn't do it once. Think about that. If one time you questioned Moses and God, like, killed a bunch of people in front of you, would you ever question him again? No, you would never question him again. Not even one time. It has been like five times. Oh my. Yeah. So stupid. And Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly under the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and they fell upon their faces, and the glory of the Lord appeared to them. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, take the rod, and gather thou the assembly together, and Aaron thy brother, and speak ye unto the rock before their eyes, and it shall give forth his water, and thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock, so thou shalt give the congregation. And Moses took the rod from before the Lord, as he commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock, and he said unto them, hear now, ye rebels, must we fetch you water out of this rock? And Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock twice, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their beasts also. I like that bit in there with Moses is really starting to act like a diva. The power's going to his head. He's like, ah, do you guys, rebels, do you really require water to live? Here, let me just make it come out of this rock. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, because ye believed me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore ye shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them. And what? What just happened? So it looks like God is mad at Moses and Aaron now. He said, because Moses and Aaron, because ye believed me not. What just happened? Let me read some of these notes. There's these notes to explain what's going on here. I'll just have to pull them up here. 20, chapter 20, verse 12. Okay, this is great. It says here, what was the offense for which Moses was excluded from the promised land? It appears to have consisted, this is Clark's commentary in the Bible, it appears to have consisted in some or all of the following particulars. Number one, God had commanded him to take the rod in his hand and go and speak to the rock, and it should give forth water. It seems Moses did not think speaking would be sufficient, therefore he smote the rock without any command to do so. There's three more, but I gotta stop on this one. Really, that's Moses' crime here, for which he's banned from the promised land. He didn't. So Moses didn't think. So God gives him a rod, and says, go speak to that rock. And then when Moses taps the rock with the rod, God's outraged. How dare you? I told you to speak to that rock, not to tap the rock. And I love, too, it's trying to, like, go into Moses' thought process. Like, he didn't think speaking would be sufficient, so he tapped it with a stick. Because that would, you know, naturally, he's like, oh, speaking, that's not going to get what? God, are you a high? I can't speak to a rock and make water come out of it. I have to tap it with my rod, idiot. like that makes any sense. Okay, and number two. He did this twice. Which certainly in this case indicated a great perturbation of spirit and want of attention in the presence of God. Because he tapped the rock twice instead of once with this. Oh, my God. Oh, you get the yawns when I read this stupid book. Sorry. Number three. So that's option two, which also sounds absurd. Number three, he permitted his spirit to be carried away by a sense of the people's disobedience, and thus, being provoked, he was led to speak unadvisedly with his lips, where he said, hear now, ye rebels. That's that part. Did God tell him not to say anything? I mean, he didn't really tell him not to say that. Frankly, if you didn't tell him, it's fair game. Option number four. He did not acknowledge God in the miracle which was about to be wrought, but took the honor to himself and Aaron, saying, must we fetch you water out of this rock? Thus it plainly appears that they did not properly believe in God and did not honor him in the sight of the people, for in their presence they seemed to express a doubt whether the thing could possibly be done. As Aaron appears to have been consenting in the above particulars, therefore he is also excluded from the promised land. Yeah, I was going to say, I don't remember Aaron doing any of this. Aaron didn't really have a part in this. He sort of was just standing there, you know, like with Moses. Aaron never really does anything for himself. I don't know if he really exists. I think he's just an imaginary friend of Moses's. But isn't this just outstanding, this little bit of crap here? It's just outstanding. Outstanding. Ooh, getting long on this podcast. Gotta get going. This is the water of Meribah. So on the one hand, you have these people who constantly question God, and God keeps, he kills a few of them, but he keeps forgiving them, essentially. On the other hand, Moses tapped a rock twice instead of speaking to it. So he was out. He is dead to me, God says. He is dead to me. Moses, you are dead to me. That's fair. This is the water of Meribah, because the children of Israel strove with the Lord, and he was sanctified in them. And Moses sent messengers from Kadesh unto the king of Edom. Thus saith thy brother Israel, thou knowest all the travail that hath befallen us, how our fathers went down into Egypt, and we have dwelt in Egypt a long time, and the Egyptians vexed us and our fathers. And this is all a note that he's sending to some people in a land. And when we cried unto the Lord, he heard our voice and sent an angel and hath brought us forth out of Egypt. And behold, we are in Kadesh, a city in the uttermost of thy border. Let us pass, I pray thee, through thy country. We will not pass through the fields or through the vineyards, neither will we drink of the water of the wells. We will go by the king's highway. We will not turn to the right hand or to the left. Off again, or to the left, until we have passed thy borders. And Edom said unto them, thou shalt not pass by me, lest I come out against thee with the sword. Really? And, you know, somehow I doubt this story. It's like when you hear someone you know is a little nuts talk about how someone wronged them in some way, and in the story, they always portray the other person in a completely unrealistic way, that where you know there's no way that was true. Or it's sort of like how Moses portrayed his people in the Old Testament, you know, in such a way where there's no way that these people could have existed with these qualities and these actions. Really, so we're to believe that Moses sent this nice, considerate letter ahead of time, simply requesting to walk through the land, not touch anything or
do anything like that. And the king had this reaction that he was going to come out with a sword and kill him. Really? Is it weird? Okay, all right. It's possible. And the children of Israel said unto him, we will go by the highway. They're reiterating here. No, we'll go by the highway. And if I and my cattle drink of thy water, then I will pay for it. I will only, without doing anything else, go through on my feet. And he said, thou shalt not go through. And Edom came out against him with much people and with a strong hand. Wow, they really didn't want him to come through. Huh. Maybe they know their reputation for just killing people and taking their land. Thus Edom refused to give Israel passage through his border, wherefore Israel turned away from him. And the children of Israel, even the whole congregation, journeyed from Kadesh and came unto Mount Hor. I don't know. Do you know why they call it Mount Hor? And Lord spoke unto Moses and Aaron in Mount Hor by the coast, H-O-R, by the way, by the coast of the land of Edom, saying, Aaron shall be gathered unto his people, for he shall not enter into the land which I have given unto the children of Israel, because ye rebelled against my word at the water of Meribah. This is kind of important. So God just said, Aaron and Moses are still involved with this. And God says, Aaron shall be gathered unto his people, for he shall not enter into the land which I have given, because he rebelled against my word. And Aaron at this point has got to be like, what? I stood by Moses while he did his little staff thing. I didn't even say anything. Why are you so mad at me? What did I do? I was standing. Well, this is bullshit. And I don't even remember. Yeah. Aaron didn't do anything. He stood there. And take Aaron and Eleazar, his son, and bring them up unto Mount Hor. Actually, sounds kind of good, actually, in those times. And strip Aaron of his garments. Oh, okay. And put them upon Eleazar, his son. Oh, never mind. And Aaron shall be gathered unto his people and shall die there. And Aaron said, hello, I'm standing right here, and you're talking about me. And Moses did as the Lord commanded. And they went up to Mount Hor in the sight of all the congregation. And Moses stripped Aaron of his garments. Wow. And put them upon Eleazar, his son. And Eleazar's like, you know, I already have garments. So it's kind of hot out here. I don't really need... Okay, all right, fine. Well, whatever. And Aaron died there in the top of the mount. And Moses and Eleazar came down from the mount. Really? So did Aaron just kill himself, or did he just shut down like C-3PO or something? Was he like, well, Moses, if you won't be needing me, I'll go ahead and shut down for a while. It's like, yeah, that's fine. How God just said like, Aaron, just die. And Aaron's like, okay, do I just think dead thoughts or what? How do I do this? And when all the congregation saw that Aaron was dead, they mourned for Aaron 30 days, even all the house of Israel. Boy, he got a raw freaking deal. He really did. All right, chapter 21. And when King Arad the Canaanite, which dwelt in the south, heard tell that Israel came by way of the spies, then he fought against Israel and took some of them prisoners. And Israel vowed a vow. I vowed a vow unto the Lord. And said, if thou wilt indeed deliver this people into my hand, then I will utterly destroy their cities. And what is in... That's funny how Moses presents it. What is in it for God? He says, all right, God, if you will deliver these people to me, I will totally wipe them out and their cities. Does God not like cities? Does he hate cities? Is that how usually you would like when you do that if like when you're a kid and you're pleading with God, or if you're an unfortunate adult who does that, like usually you go, okay, God, if you'll do this one thing for me, I will, you know, give to charity, I'll be a better person, I'll, you know, not murder people anymore, you know, something. But like, what's in it for God with this? Like, if you help me kill these people, then I'll kill them. God's like, okay, Sounds good to me. And the Lord hearkened to the voice of Israel. Yeah, that's pretty much. And delivered up the Canaanites, and they utterly destroyed them and their cities, and he called the name of the place Hormah. Yeah, okay, well, it's pretty straightforward. And they journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to to compass the land of Edom. And this, sorry, that just sounds, could be so gross, so funny. And the soul of the people... Get down from Mount Hor, the Red Sea. It's not good. Don't go there for a week. And the people spake against God and against Moses. Oh, jeez, no way. You cannot be serious. Wherefore have ye brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no bread, neither is there any water, and our soul loatheth this light bread. You can't be serious. This can't be real. This is not real. And I love how every time they go back to the same question, they're like your wife. They'll go back to the beginning. They'll be, why did you bring us out of Egypt? Moses has got to be like, that was like 40 years ago. Are you still hung up about that? I mean, I figure we've dealt with this by now. Most of you are dead who even came out of Egypt. Why are you so stuck on that, you guys? You know? Also, they just got to annihilate an entire people. They don't have, you know, some supplies lying around after that, some plunder. No, they're starving. And the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and much of the people of Israel died. And the people were like, oh, right, the Lord. I totally forgot about him again. Well, it has been nearly 3 days since he last did something miraculous. You know, I can't be expected to remember every god that does stuff like that. Therefore the people came to Moses and said, we have sinned, for we have spoken against the Lord and against thee. Pray unto the Lord, and that he take away the serpents from us. And Moses prayed for the people. And the Lord said unto Moses, make thee a fiery serpent, and set it upon a pole, and it shall come to pass that every one that is bitten, when he looketh upon it, shall live. And Moses made a serpent of brass, and put it upon a pole, and it came to pass that if a serpent had bitten any man, when he beheld the serpent of brass, he lived. And the children of Israel set forward and pitched in Oboth, and they journeyed from Oboth, and pitched at Aijibarim, in the wilderness which is before Moab, toward the sun rising. From thence they removed, and pitched in the valley of Zered. From thence they removed and pitched on the other side of... I'm just going to try to get through this last bit. There's nothing really happens. Spoiler alert. Which is the wilderness that cometh out of the coast of Amorites. For Arnon is the border of Moab, between Moab and the Amorites. Wherefore it is said in the book of the wars of the Lord, which is some book that must have been around then, what he did in the Red Sea and in the brooks of Arnon, and at the stream of the brooks that goeth down to the dwelling of Ar, that lieth upon the border of Moab. And from thence they went to Beer. That is well whereof Beer, it's spelled Beer, must be a place, whereof the Lord spake unto Moses, gather the people together, and I will give them water. Then Israel sang this song, spring up, O well, sing ye into it. That's a good song. The princes digged the well. That's it, that's the song. Digged the well, and the nobles of the people digged it by the direction of the lawgiver with their staves, and from the wilderness they went to Mattanah, and from Mattanah to Nahaliel, and from Nahaliel to Bamoth, and from Bamoth in the valley that is in the country of Moab to the top of Pisgah, which looketh toward Jeshimon. Are you getting all this? Are you writing this down? Also, do they have some sort of plan? Where are they going right now? What are they doing? Are they lost? And Israel sent messengers unto Sirhan, king of the Amorites, saying, let me pass through thy land. We will not turn into the fields or into the vineyards. We will not drink of the waters by the king's highway until we pass thy borders. And Sihon would not suffer Israel to pass through his border, but Sihon gathered all his people together and went out against Israel into the wilderness. And he said, he's like, hey guys, these people want to pass through our land. Let's go murder them. It's a perfectly reasonable thing to do. And he came to Jahaz and fought against Israel. And Israel smote him with the edge of the sword, and possessed his land from Arnon unto Jabbok, even unto the children of Ammon, for the border of the children of Ammon was strong. And Israel took all these cities, and Israel dwelt in all the cities of the Amorites, who they killed, in Heshbon, and in all the villages thereof. For Heshbon was the city of Sihon, the king of the Amorites, who had fought against the former king of Moab, and taken all his land out of his hand, even unto Arnon. Wherefore they that speak in Proverbs say, come into Heshbon, let the city of Sihon be built and prepared. I'm not really following any of this, I'll be honest with you. For there is a fire gone out of Heshbon, a flame from the city of Sihon. It hath consumed Ar of Moab, and the lords of high places of Arnon. Woe to thee, Moab, there thou art undone, O people of Chemosh. He hath given his sons that escaped and his daughters in captivity to Sihon, king of the Amorites. We have shot at them. Heshbon has perished even unto Dibon, and we have laid them to waste even unto Nophah, which reacheth unto Medeba. Thus Israel, almost done. Thus Israel dwelt in the land of the Amorites. Okay. And Moses sent to spy out Jazer, and took the villages thereof, just took them, and they drove out the Amorites that were there, because screw them, they didn't deserve to be there. And they turned and went up by the way of Bashan, and Og the king of Bashan went out against them, and he and all his people, to the battle at Edrei. And the Lord said unto Moses, fear him not, for I have delivered him into thy hand, and all his people in his land, and thou shalt do to him as thou didst unto Sihon, king of the Amorites, which dwelt at Heshbon. You remember how that went. He killed all those people. So they smote him and his sons and all his people until there were none left him alive, and they possessed his land. The end. So that's our chapter there. Just some light, you know, murder and land stealing. And theft going on at the end there. Pretty cool. So that's the end of this episode. And I've done it. I'm gonna stick with this. Hoping that subscribership keeps growing. And please, if you haven't written a review on iTunes, I think that is pretty much the only thing that actively helps people subscribe to this podcast. Please do that. I'd really appreciate it. And if you have any questions or comments, you can always send them to comments@thomasinthebible.com or just post them on the website, that crappy WordPress website I got going there. I definitely read those and I even respond to them. So if you have posted in the past, I've probably responded to it. So you should check. I don't know if it sends you an email or anything. Oh, enough about me. So yeah, see you guys next week. Bye.